Does your basement leak only when it rains? At PermaSeal, we believe your basement should be dry all the time. For a free estimate, you know who to call, PermaSeal. 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
It's so nice to hear the voice again of Dawn Jackson Blattner, America's favorite nutritionist and dietitian. Dawn, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Well, hey, how are you? Happy New Year. This is our first official time chatting in 2025.
You'll be proud of me. I've lost 5 pounds in the new year.
I don't want to ask how.
Yep, that's how I did it. And so
I
don't recommend that. But so let's just talk about good ideas for the new year. And you said that the FDA approves a new definition of healthy. So let's start there, Dawn.
Yes, let's start there. So I am glad you are feeling healthy and you are here. And that is really interesting news for dietitians. And all health experts are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened. So as you said, the FDA, after nearly almost, I mean, it's about 30 years, they have this definition of healthy, and they just officially updated it. And why we should all care about this, even if we're not nutrition nerds like myself, is that this really can potentially help us more quickly in the grocery store pick foods that are actually healthy. So they have updated this definition, and it's like, oh, maybe we could pick these foods that are healthier for us. And, you know, think about it. Better definition of healthy manufacturers now are going to be pushed to higher standards to make products that now meet this definition. So let me tell you about the definition. Another thing that's interesting is the FDA is starting to create a symbol of healthy. So one of these days we should be able to go down the grocery store and actually see the symbol and feel more confident in choosing our products. But here's what the definition is all about. Okay. So about 30 years ago, they were like, you know what healthy should be? It's we're going to have people limit saturated fat, sodium, total fat, and cholesterol in food. And that's the old definition, because updated, the new healthy says, wait a second, you know what? I agree with the saturated fat. We should still limit that. I agree with the sodium. I think we should still limit that. But wait a second. Total fat and cholesterol, those aren't as important anymore. We know that we don't have to do low fat anymore. Total fat's not that big of a deal. But you know what is important and what we do have new research on is added sugar. So the old definition didn't have anything about added sugar. And now we really are focusing that definition of healthy on lower saturated fat, lower sodium, and less added sugar. The other thing that this new healthy definition, this is really cool, is it used to be that a healthy food just had enough like vitamin A, vitamin C, calcium, iron. Didn't even matter what it was made up of. It just had these nutrients in it, probably pumped in, and it wasn't actually a real food. The new definition of healthy says, wait a second, you know what? Shouldn't our healthy definition be real food? Like have a vegetable in there, have a fruit, be a dairy food, have a protein food in there, have some whole grains in there. So the new definition really does emphasize healthy whole foods. So let me give you examples of what used to be healthy and what now is considered healthy. So it used to be okay. Foods used to be okay to call themselves healthy, like yogurt that was very high in added sugar. Breakfast cereals that was very high in added sugar, but they were fortified with all these nutrients in there. White bread used to be able to be called healthy that had no whole grains in there because it was fortified with all of these, additives of vitamin A or iron or calcium. Fruit snacks that were high in added sugar, snack bars that were high in added sugars, fortified fruit punches that were, all these things were considered healthy, and we were fine with them until now. Now FDA says, wait a second, here's what we're going to call healthy. It fatty fish, that used to not be able to be called healthy because it had too much fat in it, but now we know that good fats are good for us. So all things like salmon and tuna are now considered healthy. Plain low-fat and fat-free yogurt is considered healthy, but not all that added sugar stuff. Eggs are now considered healthy because they are a protein source and they have goodness as a food group in there. They used to not be able to. 100% olive oil. Again, that fat definition, because we eliminated that idea and we said, wait a second, you know what? Some fats are good. Now, olive oil can be considered healthy. Water actually officially is on the list of being considered healthy, as is all of the fruits and vegetables, whether they're frozen or chopped or dried or canned, as long as there's not added sodium. Those are all healthy foods. So anyways, it makes a lot of sense. This is really good news for us in our food supply, is that if we have a definition of healthy that's better, manufacturers likely will start trying to be better.
I'm surprised what you also have to say about coffee. We'll get to that in a second. But just real quick about total fat and healthy fat, is there a word or phrase I should look for when I'm buying foods if I'm looking for fat content? You said some of it's good, some of it's bad. How do I know which is which, what I should buy?
Yeah, great question. So when you're looking at a food label, the first thing you look at is the small print, the ingredients. Do you see food groups in there? You know, fruits and vegetables and whole grains and dairy. And then you can start looking at these nuanced things like the sodium, the added sugars, and what your question is saturated fat. That's the stuff we're trying to limit. So you do not have to look at total fat anymore. That was a very 1980s thing. We all were like, oh my gosh, total fat. You don't really have to look at that. Really, the first type of fat to look at is saturated fat, and you're trying to limit that. And it follows the rule, just like everything on a food label, yep, the 5 and 20 rule.
Right.
5% means it's low in saturated fat. 20% means it's high in saturated fat. So avoid the high saturated fat foods. And of course, any food without a food label is always best, like the fruits and vegetables in your grocery store.
5 and 20 rule, that comes up a lot when we talk to Don Jackson Blattner, the registered dietitian, nutritionist, author, game show winner. 5% or less means it's a small amount and you can maybe use that with some confidence. 20% or more of something that's dubious or bad, that's too much, that's too high, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, vice versa, you can use the 5 and 20 rule, you know, like for good things too. Like you want more fiber in your diet? Well, look for foods that are closer to that 20%. That's like a higher fiber food.
312-981-7200. Okay, so also information from Dawn about coffee. This segment, by the way, is sponsored by Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating, the original healthy meal company. Is this new research about coffee, Dawn?
Oh my gosh, it came out yesterday, and I was like, we have to talk about this. It's so interesting. So here's the deal. If you back up and you think about it, coffee is actually one of the highest antioxidant foods that Americans eat. Our diet is so low in fruits and vegetables and so low in antioxidant foods that coffee is one of the absolute best things that we have for antioxidants, whether that's decaf or regular. So coffee tends to be one of these things that's considered healthy in moderation. This new research comes out and says, listen, that's still true, but when you drink it matters. That this new research that came out yesterday says when you have 2 to 4 cups of coffee, it should be in the morning because it's linked to 16% lower risk of dying from any reason and a 31% lower risk of dying, particularly from heart disease. And this is caffeinated or decaffeinated. And people who drink it throughout the day, not just in the morning, did not have these benefits. And the potential hypothesis here is like, hey, maybe if you're drinking coffee after noon, it's impacting your sleep or your metabolism or your circadian rhythms. We don't know, but here's what we do know. If you're a coffee drinker, decaf or caffeinated, try and have your 2 to 4 cups and do that in the morning, not just spread through the day.
That is so interesting, and I'm surprised that they're as generous with 2 to 4 cups of coffee. And I just wondered if that's an association or a cause, you know, that, okay, the people that get up in the morning and they have some coffee are doers and they just happen to lead healthier lifestyles and coffee's just part of the lifestyle, but it's not what's making them healthy. Or is, in fact, the caffeine, the coffee itself giving you a longer life and less chance for cardiovascular disease?
Yeah, so at most nutrition research is, like you say, it's association. We think like it is probably this. The researchers controlled for a lot of these confounding variables like you're talking about. They tried to get rid of a lot of confusing things and really just focus on when people were drinking coffee. But, you know, with living, breathing people, there's going to be all of these confounding variables. But you can feel pretty good to know that coffee, decaf or regular, has antioxidants in there.
Yeah.
And antioxidants are those compounds that do protect cells from disease. So it's not unheard of to think of coffee being so beneficial, but the new information of drinking it in the morning so that it's not affecting your sleep or your metabolism, that does make a little bit of sense too.
It sure does. And you don't care if it's caffeinated or decaffeinated?
In this study, it shook out to be both of them being beneficial.
How about that? Don Jackson Blattner is on a line, and we've got lots of questions for you. You ready, DJB?
I'm ready. Let's bring it on.
Question for Don. How healthy is frozen broccoli or cauliflower rice sold in supermarkets?
So healthy. Oh, my gosh. So healthy. I think a lot of people mistakenly think that frozen fruits and vegetables aren't good for you, but the opposite is true. They're excellent for you. And in fact, one of the things is, you know, when fruits and vegetables are picked and they're flash frozen like that, it locks in a lot of those nutrients. So, you know, it's not sitting in a truck. It's not sitting all day, you know, at the grocery store. You know, it really is good for you. And the thing I love about, especially those like the broccoli frozen and the frozen cauliflower rice, is that, you know, if you haven't gone to the grocery store and you don't have a lot of fruits and vegetables in your fridge, you can always have those in your freezer. They are a great backup so that there's never an excuse that you don't have fruits and vegetables in your house because they're there. And I love, like, we always have frozen berries to make smoothies. But I think those two are probably my personal favorites, too, is the broccoli and the cauliflower rice.
Talk about blueberries, John. I see things on Facebook now saying they're bad.
Oh, isn't it sad the where we are at with this misinformation on social media and just it is really sad that people are afraid of some of the healthiest foods for you. Blueberries are, so, I mean, they're of the superfoods, you know, they are absolutely great for us because of that deep color. And you can really know that by looking at the colors of fruits and vegetables. Those colors are indicators that there's compounds in there that are protective for our health. So, you know, blueberries have been studied and linked to overall health, but particularly like brain health. But it doesn't have to be just blueberries. It can be raspberries, it can be strawberries, blackberries. That berry family is very beneficial.
Let's take some phone calls. We'll start with Jenny. You're on WGN Radio. Go ahead, Jenny. You're on with Dawn.
Hi, Dawn. I love your show. So recently lost 90 pounds, got my A1C down from over 8 to 5. Thank you, semaglutide. But for some reason, I've never had this problem in all my life. I have an insatiable obsession with sugar. And I know you were talking about sugar. Is there any amount of added sugar that I can have?
Okay, so this is first a congratulations. I mean, that is some crazy, awesome metabolic health that you have yourself with a better A1C and weight loss. It, really awesome. It isn't that you have zero added sugar. That really isn't our goal, you know, as a whole health community. It's just to be very diligent about knowing where your added sugar is coming from, looking at it in the label. And one of the things that I say a lot, especially when people are losing weight and they're getting healthy, is sugar cravings can really be helped by meals on schedule and higher protein meals. So oftentimes when I have people on medications where they're losing weight like that, it's pretty easy to skip a meal. It's pretty easy to have a pretty low protein meal, but protein in regular meals can really help that sugar craving. The other thing that's interesting is fruit itself has natural sugars in there and lots of nutrition, and that when people have two pieces of fruit in the day, they oftentimes have less of a sugar craving because their body is getting natural sugars from great healthy places. So that, with all that said, for most people, 30 grams of added sugar, which sounds like a lot, but it adds up very quickly, or less is the recommended. You know, I encourage people to go lower than that if they can, but that's the general guide.
You're not critical of people using the semaglutides?
Oh, no. I think medications, when the right people are taking it under the right guidance of a doctor, I think it's wonderful. Do I think that classification of medication is being absolutely abused by the wrong people, not under the right medical advice? Absolutely, it's being abused. But for the right people, it's great.
Vivian, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for the phone call, Jenny. Vivian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this. I'm just wondering, so the new guidelines apply to caffeinated beverages as well.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Like Diet Coke and Pepsi and things.
So, healthy is not, caffeine isn't one of the molecules or nutrients looked at. However, we do know that caffeine is an actual good for you compound that gets people energized. It's very good for sports nutrition to get people going. It's just one of those things like anything. It's a drug that when abused in the wrong amount is bad for you. So caffeine early in the day, whether that's from coffee or tea in particular, not so much sodas or energy drinks, but coffee and tea earlier in the morning is actually great for us. And like we were talking about before, I mean, it can be 2 cups for many people is about the right amount of caffeine for a day. But for some people, it could be even up to 4.
But why is it that a Diet Coke in the morning with caffeine is any better or worse? It would seem to me to be the same, essentially, as a cup of coffee.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice for a lot of people who love diet soda? But here's the truth, is that why coffee and tea are different is because the caffeine is naturally occurring within a plant source. So it's naturally occurring within that coffee bean, and that coffee bean is what has all these antioxidants and good for us compounds, and it just happens to carry with it caffeine. Tea is much the same way. You know, it's that plant compound that's so good for us. It just happens to have caffeine that, you know, is carried with it. But when you're looking at a soda, there's no natural plant compound that's naturally good for us. It's just straight processed caffeine.
Okay, so 847 says, coffee or green tea then, which is better?
Oh, here's the thing. Tea is definitely one of those things, whether it's green or black tea, a lot of great research about it being excellent for us. For people who love tea, I'm going to give that a little bit of an advantage, tiny bit over coffee. But I'm a coffee enjoyer myself. So, I mean, they're both up there. Tea gets a little bit of an advantage.
I'll read these two. Dawn, what about seed oils? There seems to be a huge pushback on them. Is that realistic? And this person says, what's the difference between olive oil and avocado oil? I can answer that one. One comes from olives. One comes from avocados. Okay, Dawn, go ahead and react to those two.
Okay, I knew you were going to say that too, by the way. I love it. Okay, so olive oil is the more heart smart oil, even of avocado oil. They both are have a place in your kitchen, avocado oil for more high intensity cooking, like real high on the grill, use avocado oil. Otherwise, olive oil is the notorious oil that's been studied time and time again, and that really is the best oil to use for most things in your kitchen. Now, when it comes to everybody is talking about seed oils right now, and that's, you know, anything from safflower, sunflower, canola, all these things. What's really the problem are ultra processed foods that have these oils and tons of saturated fat, added sugar, too much sodium. And so it's sort of getting lumped in with all of the foods that they're in. Usually it's never one ingredient that's causing us all these problems, and that really is the case here. It's not that the seed oils are so horrible for us, it's that they tend to be in ultra processed foods that don't have much nutrition and also have many of the things we're supposed to be avoiding.
We're out of time, Dawn.
Oh, this felt good to be back, baby.
It really did, and I really want you to continue to join us in the new year. Thank you. Have a great new year. Thanks for helping us again, Dawn. People can follow you on Instagram, DJ Blattner, online, DawnJacksonBlattner.com. She is America's favorite nutritionist and dietitian. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Jen. Talk to you next week.